Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studios on the phone with Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm groovy. I've been hanging out, having a good day. It's in the 40s outside. Spring might actually be coming. And life is good.
I think it is spring, actually. I actually heard summer birds yesterday and today.
All right, we did a lot of driving from Iowa up to Ontario, and there were a lot of geese heading north, so that was kind of nice to see. So I'm hoping it is coming. I completely agree. So we haven't recorded since you were here in person in studio, I don't think, and so it's been a while. And I know you got a topic for us, so what are we talking about today?
I was wondering what you call art.
Oh.
Okay,
well, this is a complicated thing for me because
exactly. So keep talking.
Well, okay, cuz I've had this argument with people before. I think art is a different thing than
what we do with kids.
I think art requires some mastery of skill. I think art requires some mastery of skill. So I think what stonecutters that carved all these cathedral centuries ago, I think they were artists. But I also think that a mastery of skill needs to be part of it, I think. I don't think the stuff the kids do at the easel is necessarily art. They may be developing those skills and mastering those skills that will one day allow them to do art, but I don't think that's art.
I like the phrase creative self-expression. Like, if you felt the need to classify it under something more than just fine motor,
yeah,
like, you know, there might be some kind of self-expression because, you know, we've all seen them, like, you know, if you put music on, they might start smacking the finger painting to the beat of the music, right? So, yeah, I agree with you. I think art, I'd call anything art anything that gets an emotional response, anything that evokes an emotional response. Here's the question, and I threw Jeff a curveball. Usually Jeff has the topics, and anyway, I just got off the phone with a woman, and we spent 40 minutes chatting about this, about art and creative self-expression and Pinterest and process and product and DAP. And apparently the word on the street is that the topic that will divide a room full of early childhood people right now is Pinterest versus process. And to her credit, I'm loving that she is attempting to kind of serve as a bridge between, and I really told her honestly, I said, well, I appreciate your willingness to kind of do that dance of niceness because, you know, I'm not always willing to do that. She's like, I'm trying to take what they're seeing and give them tools and knowledge and understanding or whatever it might be of just realizing that you can take this, but perhaps make it more process-oriented or more developmentally appropriate. But I'll tell you the real thing that caught my eye, which is why I took her phone call, because we had bantered today on email a little bit. She said that there's a difference between the direct instruction required from origami than the direct instruction required from gluing cotton balls onto a paper plate and calling it a cloud. And I liked that. Do you have any comment to that?
Nothing other than I agree. Yeah, there's...
Yeah, and that was mine, too. It was like, I totally agree with this, right? And it for a few minutes, we ripped on the direct instruction rant, right? Because sometimes direct instruction falls under the it's evil and bad all the time, and the reality is that it's not.
No.
Because, you know, if you have somebody who wants to learn origami, you know, granted, I get that you can, you know, pull up a YouTube video now and teach yourself, but, you know, controlling for that variable, there was a time when somebody needed to pass that skill and talent and ability and, you know, knowledge onto you, and that doesn't happen through osmosis. It might happen through modeling, And it also happens through direct instruction. So we had this really interesting conversation about that. And she had, you know, she had done a workshop, and the room got split down the middle of, and it turned into just a debate. And you and I have talked about this before, so I don't feel in any way, you know, bad or like this is not appropriate fodder for us to be talking about. But she said she was surprised at how some of the folks felt personally attacked by the conversation, as opposed to just seeing that perhaps other people were sharing their comments from the other side of the fence or the other vantage point.
Oh, that's just the thing. I tried to limit my rants to 20 minutes on the fact that people take other people's opinions as personal attacks, and that it just annoys the holy crap out of me. Yeah, I'm trying to cut down on my swearing. It just annoys the heck out of me that you know, other people, atheists, I don't know, other people don't get to voice. It's cry bullying. It's, oh, you hurt my feelings with your opinion. Well, piss the hell off. That's what I've got to say about it, because I just don't have time for those people. If people want to have an honest conversation about their differences on these topics, I'm all for that. But I'm not gonna hide my strong opinions to keep from hurting somebody's feelings either.
Well, and I straight up asked her. I said, you know, do you ever listen to the podcast? And she says yes. I said, have you listened to the shit we see on Pinterest? And she said yes. And I said, you know, I disclosed to her what my issue with Pinterest is. I said, you know, there's good stuff, there's bad stuff, whatever. Good, bad is all relative. I get that. But just for the sake of conversation, my issue with stuff like Pinterest is that it creates even more competition between teachers, and thus competing against each other over whose bulletin board is the cutest takes time, energy, and effort away from deepening connections and relationships in your classroom. You are not defined by your bulletin board. And with all the love in my heart, if your bulletin board is all you got going for you right now, call me, because you bring more to the table than what you're putting on your bulletin board.
Okay, that was a little bit quick. Go back to the part about you're not defined by your bulletin board. And let's take that apart a little bit, because I think that's...
Well, and I'm glad that you locked and loaded on that, because it brings up, you know, a thousand other little minutia in an early childhood classroom environment that nobody ever talks about. But I have found that if the environment is right and if the audience is right, and I'll throw something out there, and then there's this laugh, which tells me that I'm spot on. Bulletin boards are one of them. Your newsletters are another one. Your cubby tags are another one. And whether or not, here's the drum roll, give me a drum roll. Am I able to get all of my children to sleep during nap time?
Oh, yeah. You win nap time.
Oh, my God. You win nap time. And you know what? And anybody who tells you that that's not true is either lying or has just never really stopped to pay attention, because it is such a thing. And I don't know why, and maybe there's an article here or a deeper podcast or a deeper, let's identify what some of those things are, where it's like mommy wars, right? It's like this, you know, the mommy shaming of each other and I'm not a mommy, so I'm only talking about stuff I've seen and read of, you know, the undercutting each other at the playgrounds and at the playgroups and all that nonsense. The same kind of crap happens in child care centers and in early childhood environments.
Oh, all the time. So,
when
it goes back to your art thing, and art and Pinterest. Let me see if I can tie this together. I think that
I don't think you see any art on Pinterest.
I think
maybe not on the pins that I've been looking at.
Yeah, maybe
only the ones maybe watch, because we were talking about,
because we're talking shit about him. No, here's the deal. I think there is an art to doing the job of early learning well. I think Seth Godin, who we both read now and again, he says art is I can't remember the exact quote. Well, oh damn, what an asshole I am.
You're fired.
Art is it's making a connection to another person. It's kind of like what you said. And I think you can be an artist in the early learning profession. But if you're getting every one of your damn ideas from Pinterest, you're not doing art.
And so if you're
getting your ideas from Pinterest and you're just doing that thing and not putting any thought into the why of the doing, and you're not bringing any of your personal knowledge and wisdom and skills and experience, it's part of what I said at the beginning when you asked what art is. There's some skill there. If you're not bringing any skill to the exchange, you're not doing the art of early learning. You're doing babysitting. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I do like you and her both made the same point, which again, not again, because I haven't said it already, but I'll full disclose here that I had never really, what I realized today after my conversation with her, and I've realized it with you before, but it really kind of hit home today, was that I use the word art to talk about what's happening in an early childhood environment, and I'm like embracing all of these other things, but it's not that kind of art. Do you know what I'm saying? But I perhaps have made the mistake of thinking that I can just say the word or the word do art, and that's understood as being multifaceted. And I might have to pull back and rethink the language that I'm using because it might be sending an incorrect message to some of the people who are listening to me talk.
Yeah. I play with that language sometimes too. And sometimes you just go to art for short. I mean, it becomes a shorthand.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But I think with using it as a shorthand has also come an assumption that everybody in earshot subscribes to the same, perhaps, shorthand of something that's so much bigger.
Yeah.
That's what my takeaway from that conversation with her has been, was that I might need to rethink how I'm using that shorthand, or I at least need to acknowledge that this is my shorthand, but this is my bigger definition. But for the sake of conversation for the next, 90 minutes during the workshop, This is the big picture, and we're calling it art.
Yeah. Now,
go ahead. No, I had nothing.
I was just gonna. We talked about how one of the definitions of art that we kind of both agree on is that it creates an emotional response. Now, what about the parent that comes in and so and so painted something on the easel, and the parent comes in and they're so excited about it that they wet themselves? Does that make that thing art? Or is that...
Well, it depends on how well you know the parent.
Well, and see, go ahead.
You and I would both, if we had those relationships, right? If this was a third-year mama, we'd be like, really? You're kidding me, right?
That's that whole tone of voice thing
So my comment to the first-time listener, because if you've been around for a while, you would understand that like dialogue that just happened there. If you have a parent that's coming gushing in and you really want to check to see if it's an honest emotional response, ask them to identify the emotion that they're feeling. Does it make you mad, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed, hurt? What does it bring up in you? And if they look at you like, what?
Huh?
Okay, then that's not necessarily an emotional response. Does it make you happy? Okay, so this is making you happy. Can you elaborate on that for me? What about this is triggering a happy, glad emotion in you? Well, then you might find out that the kid, by the, the grace of the planets being aligned, mixed by pure coincidence and pure, whatever, randomness, the favoritest color of that mama's aunt's kitchen, you don't know.
Yeah.
But you don't know. If you only say it face value, maybe that kid made some kind of an angle that brought up an emotion. Awesome. Then, yeah, if it's a true emotional response, but my, you know, and I'm sorry if I'm sounding like the devil's advocate or the, you know, the negative Nancy at this point. A lot of what we might call an emotional response is, it, you know, it's cheese ball. It's, you know what, this is like the not work thing I've seen all day, so I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
well, and what's
it becomes, sometimes they feel like they have to respond that way so they don't hurt poor Sally's self-esteem, too. I mean, it's put...
Well, of that is because they've been conditioned to think that that's their job,
yeah,
right? Which
yeah.
Which is why you need to nurture the relationships with the parents so that you can kind of, you know, detox them off of thinking that, whether they've been told that or not, or whether they believe it or not. If that's the response you're always getting, at some point you got to move in on that and be like, you know what, it seems like you feel that you need to make, you know, a verbal response to every single thing that your child does here. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and sometimes the kids don't even think what they're doing is art. I mean, I had up here in upstairs.
I get to muck around with shit that I don't get to play with at home. This is awesome.
I think especially for kids that have free reign over the supplies and can do as you know, art. Having the materials isn't a sometimes thing. It's just, this stuff is always available to me, and I can create whatever I want to. Here in upstairs studio. Grandbaby has taken over a corner. It seems to be an ever growing corner of the studio. and the other day, there was just piles of her paintings because she did some markering, and then she needed to paint with water, and she took the pages that she'd markered on and went over them with just water and a big paintbrush, and that smeared the colors around, and she went through pages and pages and pages, and of course, she was just putting them everywhere to dry, and then they get all crinkled and bent up the way they do when they dry, and I had to say, you know, what stuff here are we keeping, and which can go in the recycling, and she went through it, and I don't think there was anything that she felt was worthy of saving, but it was all valuable because it was all part of that whole process. That I mean, and so she's learning all kinds of good stuff from it, but that doesn't mean we save it all.
No, God, no.
And none of it's going to sell at Christie's for that's an auction place, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good job.
I was trying to sound smart, but then wanted
to. I'm so proud of you.
I second guessed myself, and that takes the smart sounding bit off of it. But anyway, none of the stuff they're creating would sell at Christie's for six figures in 20 years.
Now hold on. Now I'll play devil's advocate with that too. There's always that one adult that hoards all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the event that should their life trajectory turn into something, you're the one that's got that one scribble, you know, that they did when they were two, right? But the reality is that's what. Yeah, and I don't know. I'm making it.
Oh, I got something on that too, because for the last week,
2% of the population.
Tasha has been sorting stuff. Going through closets, and she's been spring cleaning for the last month. Stuff that hasn't been touched forever. We had a bunch of stuff in storage from back in the day when her mom downsized a little bit, and it's coming up on this spring. It will mark 30 years that we've had some of these boxes around that haven't been opened in that time. And Tasha's going through this stuff, and it's like report cards from third grade. And it's stuff nobody needs, nobody cares about. Tasha was the one that was in third grade. She didn't care. And so there's a lot of this stuff that's going off to the recycling and the landfill here later this week.
I just flipped out. Okay, I've got 10 boxes at my curb right now of things that can be recycled that, like, there's no confidential business stuff in it, like, it could actually be recycled. And I have another 15 boxes in the back of my car that need to go be shredded. You know, you don't need half of what you have.
Yeah,
what you have.
I was afraid Tasha's actually planning to leave me. She's just tying up loose ends or something, and I'll wake up one morning, she'll be gone. But she assures me that's not the case, so I'm feeling a little bit more at ease about that. Yeah, so this art thing, it's a big thing. So this person you talked to, a future guest?
I asked her. She seemed interested. I also said, you know, you clearly don't have to commit to anything right now because, you know, obviously you've got some stuff on your mind right now, so I'm not looking for a commitment. But she seemed willing, and I told her that I was going to pass your information on to her.
Yeah,
or
sounds
her
like
information on to you.
Sounds like a fun
mostly, and I'll tell you why.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you why, and for the benefit of the listeners who are voyeuring in on our conversation, I would like, if she's comfortable, I would like to hear, you know, a professional play-by-play of when did the workshop make the turn of when you knew it was going to be a debate and you were not going to get to your agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to me more about like why that surprised you. Not that most of the listeners would care from a speaker's angle, but I did ask for like, what was the title of the workshop? What was the description? You know, like, did you send a, you know, what was the message that was sent to the people who selected the workshop? You know what I'm saying? Like, not that it needed to be like a presentation mentoring conversation, but I think that also might bring up some interesting, and maybe that would even be an episode that would get some really good feedback, is how many times have you gone to a workshop where the description was so not what they actually did? Or, you know, where the description was like uber sexy and you were like, holy crap, this fucking sucks. You know, or the opposite, or where you were like, ooh, I'm not sure, the description, but you went anyway, and it was like, awesome. You know, like, that would be some interesting, like, I don't know, maybe for me it would be.
Oh, I think we could have plenty of conversations around that topic. any more on the art stuff?
I think my takeaway would be that one, or my, you know, the summer.
Yeah, the wrap up.
The wrap up would be, and I know I said it fast, and that's why Jeff circled me back, and it's probably fodder for a deeper conversation, but please do not define yourself by your art project. And if you honestly really do think that the cutest bulletin board makes you better or something, please, let's have a conversation about that, because you bring way more to the table. Otherwise, you wouldn't be showing up for a 12-hour job for, you know, $8 an hour. So let's highlight some of that other stuff. Art is not just limited to what you're doing at the art table. There's lots of other ways of definitely being creative or expressing yourself. And if you do feel that there's some kind of a pressure on you to send the kids home something every day, check in with someone on that. Like, is that really something that your boss is expecting? Or is that some kind of, you know, cultural in the classroom perceived perception kind of thing? Because a lot of times directors will tell me, I really don't want them to do product-oriented art. So then I go do my workshop, and then they're like winking at me the whole time, saying, well, I'm really glad you're here, but, you know, we have to do this kind of crap. So, like, where did that disconnect happen? You know, maybe there's a conversation.
Well,
and
the other piece there is they do it because the parent expects it, quote unquote.
Quote unquote.
Yeah, and the reality is.
But you know my quote on that, right?
Oh, go ahead.
You know my quote. My sister, who used to be a dog trainer, now she has two sets of identical twin boys, so perhaps there's some skills that. Anyway, she used to tell me that dogs, like people, are smart enough to learn what you're dumb enough to teach them. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still there.
I love that quote.
That's some deep
because
shit.
If your program has been around for 30 years and you've trained the parents, whether you realized it or not, to expect a paper plate owl to come home every day, then they're smart enough to learn what we've been dumb enough to teach them.
Yeah, and and part of it, they're also being taught that by society in general. Parents think they're supposed to go batshit crazy about the paper plate butterfly because that's what parents are supposed to do. Well, you know what? Parents are busy and they work hard, and that butterfly is going to go home and it's going to sit in the back of the minivan for 3 weeks, and it's not going to make it to the refrigerator sometimes. And sometimes parents feel guilty about not having a process or the time to catalog all of this stuff, and their lives might be easier without it, but they feel guilty and less than if they admit that to themselves or admit that out loud or say it to somebody.
Yet if you call each of those parents aside individually, one-on-one, and assuming you had somewhat of a relationship with them, you could have the honest conversation, which would be you being, you know what, Levy? You can put this in the recycle bin, and your kid's never going to miss it. Yeah. And they're going to go, oh, my God, thank God, because I can't stand this. See, and that's that money war crap. Now, to that, though, and I have to say this, and I know we're pushing our time, but I have to hear myself say this. Everybody listening knows that if you've got that one kid that is going to notice, that's different. Yeah. And you know if that's your own kid, or you know if that's that kid in the class, right? So, you know, make an exception, take it with a grain of salt. But if any parental permission needs to be granted via this podcast tonight, one, you do not need to save everything. All I ask is that you either let the kid decide if it gets saved or put in the recycle bin, or you just recycle it when they're not watching. Number two, anything that you get sent home in an envelope, and I bet if we pause for a second, there's a handful of people going, oh my God, yes, you get the little cuttings, they put them in an envelope, they bring the envelope home. Here is my advice. Have I told this to Jeff? I love this. This is one of my best things ever. It's already in an envelope. You put a stamp on that bad boy and you mail it to your mother-in-law because it's already in an envelope. You know what? And let her save it and put it on the refrigerator, and you can deal with it at a later time. But it's already in an envelope, and it's just screaming to go to grandma. I have had parents like bust a gut and cry and say thank you so much. You don't need to save it. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't.
Give your, you know, you don't have
and
to.
And if you feel you need to, hold on, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
I'm
go ahead.
There is so much more technology now that assists in this, like virtual hoarding.
Yeah.
Oh, real hoarding. You can take pictures of all of this crap and make a quilt. You can make a calendar. You can make a mural. You can make a peel-off sticker to put as wallpaper on your wall. There's enough things out there for you to be able to save it without needing to save it. My Lisa Murphy bias question to you, breathe, is who are you saving it for? And if you can own that it's for you, then own it. But to have this, like, you know, posterity and oh, they're going to appreciate this, you know if that's your child's personality.
Yeah.
You know that. And if they're not that, then you need to make peace with who you're saving all of that stuff for. Because nobody, at least nobody who, oh, hold on, I was almost amazingly judgmental. Don't let the mommy haters guilt you into thinking that you have to save it.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm done.
Yeah. And don't let, well, then there's that other faction of the in the mommy wars of the bullying you into not saving it. If you really feel it's unnecessary, do your own thing, be your own person. But come back.
Right?
But come back in a couple of days and listen to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, because we dig you tuning in. We dig you sticking us in your ear holes. We're coming up. We're hitting half an hour now. We're running a little bit long, but I gotta plug a couple things. Soon the Explorations Early Learning app is gonna come out, and the only reason I want you to download that, and it's gonna be for Android, and it's gonna be available for Apple in their app shops. It's gonna have all the podcasts we're producing right there in one place, so you can get them and contact information and Facebook pages for all of our hosts. So it's gonna be really a neat way to keep tuned into some of the stuff we're doing. So check that out if you're interested. And the other thing is, on UnCon 2016, it's going to be coming up in August. And if you want to hang out with Lisa and Dan Hodgins and myself and a bunch of other fun, creative, energetic, talkative early learning people, you might want to think about joining us in Florida this August. And you can find information about that on the myplayvolution.com webpage, or you can email me. I'll drive information over to your house if you want me to.
Oh, good Lord, you will not.
I might. I'm in the neighborhood. I drop in on people. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.